This particular project will address the left-turning movement in all four legs of this intersection. It's proposed that we program $2.5 million with the funds as listed, $100,000 in 2016, for the design and preliminary engineering, with the construction coming in later at probably at the tail end of 17, but the bulk of the funds being programmed in 2018. The next project is also in the Ogden Lake urban area, a little further. This is up in North Ogden area. This is Mayor Malisky's area.
Mayor Taylor,
yes, sorry, I was being aware about you were living. So I won't elaborate. I'll stay in my notes. This particular project will also address the turning movements in this intersection, but in particular, this is 400-450 east. This is 2700 north. We get a lot of backup and all the way down through blocking access to all the other locations along the facilities. So it'll address that, but this project will also address a project that was reviewed and recommended by this body for the widening and reconstruction of 400-450 east from this point going north. So there's $100,000 recommended for 2016 for the PE and design, with the bulk of the funds residing in 2018. The third project in the Ogden Lake urban area is in North Salt Lake. Now, this particular project has several concerns to it. The first and foremost is right here is the bridge on the Redwood Road Bridge over I-215. This is a fairly narrow structure, one lane each direction. That build-up or that breakdown, because of the narrow facility there, the bottleneck, allows for backup on the ramp all the way right off my picture. It goes all the way back on to 215. Also, north of the interchange there, we have one lane northbound, two lanes southbound, and so we have dual concerns there with bottlenecks. The proposal there would be to widen the structure over I-215 and add a northbound lane from 215 up to Center Street. This is also a project that you'll be familiar with. Center Street here in North Salt Lake was reviewed and approved and recommended and approved by this body, as well as the improvements to the intersection there at Redwood Road and Center Street. The bulk of those funds are in 2018, with funds, significant amount of money, both in 2017 and 2019. But $215,000 is necessary in 2016 for the design and preliminary engineering. Now, we'll go to the next page of projects, and these three projects have to take place all in the Salt Lake urban area. Very first project is out here in Magna. This is on SR 111. It'll take this narrow facility, and it'll widen it with also improvements to shoulder, curb, gutter, and sidewalk from SR 201 up to 2700 north or 2700 south, as well as turning movements, left-hand turning movements on the SR 201 on to SR 111. The funds there in 2016 of $100,000 for the design and preliminary engineering. The next project is up in Conflict Heights. This is actually on SR 210 and Wasatch. The design here, the intent here is to construct a high-T intersection which will enable or facilitate the movement of traffic on and off of Wasatch from 210 and protect and increase the safety for both legs or all three of the legs of travel on that facility. Preliminary engineering funds in 2016 are necessary at $150,000 with the bulk of the funds next year in 2017 for construction.
So Ben, that squares up the intersection so that there's better sight distance and a few things like that?
Correct, yes. So maybe a little explanation.
Jeff,
okay, so a high-T intersection, what it does is it'll put an island here in the center, so the through traffic on the 1-210 will be separated from the turning movements on Wasatch. So Wasatch will be able to come up and they'll be able to make a protective pending this traffic going southbound, But they'll be able to make a left-hand turn and get up to speed before they're blending in with the through traffic on 210. They'll also be able to make a protected right turn movement pending this flow of traffic southbound on 210. So it separates, gives a little time for that left turn movement. Please.
Coming one of the point, now that I asked before, this intersection right here, if you really look at, you know, the Red Snake days that we see off of Little Cotton Canyon, and why we're trying to focus on non-auto solutions for the Cotton Canyon, it's this intersection right here that's causing much of the backup up through the canyon all the way up to the resorts. This is a critical intersection. If we can improve this intersection, it won't solve the problem, but we'll get a lot better flow out of those canyons. So this is a great project in that regard.
Yeah, will it create the same kind of design that exists when you get off of
33rd
coming south at 33rd and 39th? Is it that kind of similar
concept?
When you get onto
Wasatch, that's Wasatch right there. The Wasatch traffic going north at that point continues through. When you're coming off the freeway, you have a protected left that you get to go
right
and then blend in traffic. Same thing that you've done.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
I think, just for what it's worth, I think the cost of that project will come in significantly below the 9 minutes. Some of the engineering work we're doing right now, there's some issues, but you can see there's another residential road that cuts in right before the intersection and the Wasatch, and that also creates a bottleneck with all of that, and we're trying to get that all engineered.
Yeah, right through there quite a bit, actually.
Yeah. So this has been needed for a long time. We have a great project.
Thank you. The last project on this board modification is on SR 209, or what's known as 90th South. From State Street up to 7th East, this particular project will add a lane in both directions, as well as improvements to the curb gutter and sidewalk where necessary. You get quite a breakdown from State Street and 7th East on this facility, which paralyzes your State Street intersection here. This project also has the bulk of the money for construction in 2017. So that would be the board modification for this before Transcom.
Is there any questions for Ben? If not, we'd be looking for a motion.
Move to approve, Mayor.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion for the motion? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so the ayes have it. Then we will, now we need to move to the next action item there.
Wonderful, thank you. So this might be part of my only sparkle then of the whole presentation.
Okay.
That's the transition. So I
prepare yourself.
We're waiting.
There it is.
Is that cool? We can watch in reverse, but it's not as effective. So right now on item 3C, we have a unique opportunity that we get once a year, and that is to review and make recommendations that the draft transportation improvement program go out for public review and comment. The transportation improvement program, or as it's commonly referred to as TIP there, is a document that's pretty critical for along the Wasatch Front. And we may just have, I thought we'd customize this and give us our own logo. So, the Transportation Improvement Program is a six-year program of highway and transit projects. You know this. We've gone through this every time we meet. But it has 4 years of funded projects and 2 years of concept development projects, and we program all 6 years. This body makes recommendations for the projects that complete all 6 years of the Transportation Improvement Program. It's for the Salt Lake West Valley urban area and the Ogden-Layton urban area. It identifies or shows projects that are funded by the federal, state, and local government funds, and it's for all of the cities, the counties, UDOT, and UTA. It also will implement long-range plans for the highway transit projects, It helps meet our short-range needs, and it provides for the maintenance of our existing facilities. So what does this document mean to you? What does it bring to you? Well, the Transportation Improvement Program includes all of the projects that will be identified through new construction, rehab and maintenance, safety or intelligent transportation improvements, transit capital improvements or operation and maintenance, or our active transportation projects, or those projects pertaining to our bike and ped facilities. We also, this document alone represents millions of dollars, thousands of jobs, economic growth and development throughout our communities, the improvements to mobility and the access, as well as preservation of life by our safety improvements, which in turn help promote the quality of life along the Wasatch Front. By federal law, this document needs to be financially constrained. It needs to conform to air quality. It needs to be reviewed by the public and then will be approved or needs to be approved by the regional council. So in your packet, you've got several portions of this. Behind the Regal head, you've got a table that identifies the STP programs, which would be the first section of stapled projects. That's our surface transportation program. These are projects that in the past as well as in the future you've reviewed and made recommendations, and the regional council has approved those projects. The brand new projects to the program are the ones that are highlighted in the dark blue, generally on the bottoms of the sheets. The next group of papers is the congestion mitigation or the CMAQ programs. These are the projects that need to demonstrate air quality benefits through our area. Those projects are also reviewed and recommended, and these are projects that you've reviewed and recommended to the regional council. Now, the new projects, as you're aware, you reviewed them last March. We took action in April by this body to recommend to the regional council that they be included in the draft documents. Regional council approved that and approved them to be a part of the draft program. Then the third section of paper is our transportation alternatives program. These are those projects that are non-motorized types of improvements. These would be trail improvements. These would be bike and ped. These would be safe routes to schools. Then we come to the large packet with a lot of sheets stapled together. These are all the other projects that are included in the Wasatch Front Regional Council area that are led by or coordinated in the programming of by the Department of Transportation in coordination and cooperation with us. So we help and assist them in identifying these projects. They help and assist us in identifying and approving these projects. And then the last packet that's included there would be the transit section. And this will identify those projects that are preventative maintenance as well as capital improvements and the expansions of the system. And last but not least, but very important, attached to that is the air conformity or air quality conformity determination memo. This also needs to go out for public review and comment. Well, so this document has a lot of information, but exactly how does that pertain to me? Well, I've got just a few examples here of projects. So the very first
yes. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Can you just go back for 1 second? I just want to make one point before you move off of this slide about federal law.
Yes.
Of course, we do everything we need to comply with all applicable laws, but I just want to take an opportunity here to express my appreciation to Steve Call, who's sitting here characteristically, sitting in the back quietly. Steve is our Utah representative for the Federal Highway Administration. And without making any comments on what anybody may think about what's going on in, or not going on in Washington, I would just like to note that Steve here in Utah is a great partner to all of the transportation agencies. And in some ways, his job, as he sees it, is to help us navigate through and get have the most effective, efficient program that we can. And so as we're going through this, I just wanted to thank Steve for his partnership and collaboration with us. So,
Thank you.
He is a great person. Absolutely.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you. So, one of the very first projects that I just want to highlight is a project that's currently under construction. The TIP has all of those projects from the very beginning of inception all the way up through and until they're completed. This particular project is a significant project up in North Weber and Box Elder County here. This is on I-15. It'll go from 27th North and Far West all the way to the Brigham City interchange there, or 1100 South. Now this project here, as you're aware of that facility, it's two lanes in each direction, and this will construct an additional lane in each direction on this particular portion of I-15. So it'll be, years ago it wasn't very crowded, but now if you were to drive this route, you're lucky to be able to hit the speed limit at times. The next project is also a project that's been on there for a few years, and it's actually going to happen. This, I believe, is going out for advertisement later this year. This is an intersection interchange improvement on 650 North. This particular project, located right here, is the access into the west gate of Hill Air Force Base, but also is a prime route into the west communities of Davis County, with breakdowns on and under and around the interchange, as well as each of the intersections that pertain or are involved in this particular movement of traffic. Sometimes if you're traveling north on I-15, you'll get up to around this area and traffic's back two lanes all the way onto I-15 waiting to exit. This particular project will make some significant improvements, not only to mobility, but to air quality. The next project, you may recall back in February when we had an opportunity to review the actions where there were some new projects added to the TIP program. These five blue highlighted projects were added to the Transportation Investment Fund program. This is a capacity-driven program statewide. But here were the five new projects that were added in our area. There was a project up on SR-193. This will be new construction from 2000 West, where the current construction has ended, out to 3000 West. We've got a railroad-separated facility over 5600 West. We've got the lanes improvement or construction on I-15. We've got improvements on 90th South, similar to that choke point project on 90th South that we reviewed earlier. This is to the west. And then we've got improvements and constructions on the Porter Rockwell Trail, or Porter Rockwell facility. A couple other projects that would be identified in the TIP document in pertaining to transit related. As you're aware, we've approved the intermodal funds for an intermodal center on the University of Utah campus, as well as the intermodal center up on the Weber State University campus. There's also in the TIP identifications to double track the Sugar House streetcars so that the headways can be reduced and the timing can be enhanced for the traveling public that use that facility.
Ben, is that an illustrative project?
No.
It's funded.
Okay. Not all of it, but we have...
Partial.
Okay. Yep. There's two segments, and it's actually the bottleneck of that facility that this body's reviewed and recommended funding for.
Can I ask again?
Yes.
Or to UVA, how well traveled that streetcar system is or not?
Dave, your second year at UVA, it is the fastest growing. It is 30% more than last year, but we're still getting about 1,400 a day.
Can I supplement that a little bit, Mayor?
Mm-hmm.
The streetcar is in place, but the development around the streetcar is coming. I mean, it's happening some now, and much more is coming. So, for example, South Salt Lake, where the streetcar cuts through South Salt Lake, just adopted, actually with help from our TLC program, a form-based code, and they're seeing lots of residential and commercial development in that area. So I think this is one of these circumstances where the transit line is in and development is coming around it. So, I mean, consistent with what you're saying, Dave, I think that we're going to see utilization of that climb as the land use intensifies around that streetcar.
Thank you. There's also, in that document, you'll be able to identify where there's $57 million worth of preventative maintenance types of improvements, $27 million for new bus replacements and additional new and expanded services, as well as the ski bus service, one that this body also recommended for approval. In our active transportation arena along the Wasatch Front, now look at the Wasatch Front, so we go again now all the way to Brigham City and all the way down to Utah County. That's a pretty significant chunk along the Wasatch Front. Well, we've got a lot of trail systems along the Wasatch Front, and these projects are identified not only to expand our existing trail facilities, but also to improve safety. We've also got jurisdictional areas where they're improving the striping or the signage and wayfinding throughout the communities to enable the trails to work together and to enable the traveling public to be able to go from one location to another. We've got Green Bike. We've got the expansion in the Salt Lake City, and we've got the brand new implementation in the Ogden area. So a lot of alternative transportation, not to mention the components of alternative transportation that come along with many of our other projects. So, what does this mean to you? I know I could see it in all of your eyes. You could hardly wait to get home and read this to your significant loved ones as you sat down to retire this evening. Honey, let me read to you from the TIP document. However, because your time might be limited, we've got now, and it's in the early stages of development, but we've got an interactive map for the Transportation Improvement Program. In coordinated effort with the Department of Transportation, we've begun to identify the projects, and here's what you'll get from this document. So if we were to click on one of these segments that are highlighted, so there's one there on 2300 East. This particular facility, what it does from us, and as we tweak and improve the data or the information, it'll get a little cleaner, but one that's real important is this PIN number. Well, that PIN number will help you associate. So now you can go on and look on a map for projects in your area, and rather than trying to identify or know the name, you can take that PIN number and you can reference it in the document. You can see how those funds are distributed over the years, what stage or what's the status of that project. We do get a little of that information right now, and this is pretty preliminary still. This particular project's under construction. It was planned back in 2015, and here's a significant amount. This particular project is $11.5 million. So you'll be able to click on any one of those. But here's the cool part too. See this little green box down here? Well, that little green box, you can click on it, and then you can leave me a comment. Actually, you can leave Muriel a comment, but I'll get to read them maybe. But these comments right here will enable you, when you click on some, so Susie was to click on 2300 East or in that particular area right there again, she'd be able to fill this information in so that the proper contacts can be made back to you. We can get the information that's necessary, but it'll also leave behind a little dot that'll indicate, so others as they come in will be able to see that there's a dot there. Someone's left a comment, and they can go and look at that. Maybe that'll help generate other thoughts or concerns, or in a coordinated effort, be able to support the project. Jeff?
Yeah, I think one other good information we're going to put in there, which is really important, is to be able to not only the PIN that identifies you in the SIP, but the unique identifier if it's a long-range or unified plan project. Then you're able to actually track those projects all the way back through the planning process, and you go to the RTP, see that unique identifier in the RTP story map, and be able to then click on the body of information that was developed and the rationale of why it was put into the long-range plan. So these story maps are wonderful tools, not only for visualizing the project, but tracing them back through the planning process. It doesn't happen to go through. I like stage.
but rather than having to go through questions.
Thank you. So, coming back then, what does that mean for us then today?
Can I stop you right there just a minute?
Yes.
This is a hard question to answer in public, and so maybe you want to email or whatever. But the question I have is, how comfortable do you feel with this electronic website and going onto it and working on it? And if you don't feel comfortable, do you have somebody you can go to that will sit with you and help you be comfortable? Or does there need to be some kind of a tutorial put out? And it can be very simple. It can be just as simple and not fancy and not high production or anything, but a handout and a video where someone can sit at their computer and watch that on their iPad or whatever and work through it. This is a great thing on that. Yeah, so comment on that,
sure,
will you?
Thank you. And I think that, you know, for this type of format, we want to make sure that it's easy to use for end users. And so we're still working, as I mentioned, it's preliminary at this point. We don't have this posted on our website just yet because we wanted to work through some of these initial teams. We are considering adding some additional text right there in the ad comments. Going through step by step exactly how to use it.
Okay.
So if that's helpful, and you know, how to put together whatever additional materials would be appropriate for that. And what we're hoping to use this for you all, of course, but then also during the public comment period. So that will be starting next month, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the end of this month.
June 25th.
And so we will link to this map in the news release that we issue to all media outlets, and we'll be following up with reporters showing this as a really great way of getting people to understand what projects are planned for in their area.
That's good. Could I just say a thought, not a commandment, not, I mean, sometimes, you know, we say something and it takes staff 700 hours to do it and it wasn't even worth it.
Mayor, we interpret everything you say.
Yeah, I know, that's what I'm afraid of.
The commandment.
That's what I'm afraid of. There are some mayors, at least in Salt Lake County, and I assume in every county, there are some mayors that really aren't part of Wasatch Front Regional Council. By name they are, but they maybe not, they don't need a lot of roads, they're not here. There's some mayors that never come to the meeting.
Well, not all mayors in the region are actually members of the council or any of its committees. So that's a great point. They're all members of the COPS, but not of the council.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
And so maybe there's something you can send out to through the COG or however is the best way in each county. Sam handles Salt Lake County COG as well as the Conference of Mayors, so it can go right to Sam. But something so that all of the mayors are aware of it and can use it in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. And that won't take
700
hours. So.
No, okay, all right.
I didn't think this was the 11th commandment, though. So. No, but yeah, we can absolutely get this link out with some just, you know, step-by-step how to use it, you know, to the COG email list and that kind of thing. This is a new feature. So, you know, once we go live with it, yeah, we absolutely can push it out. So,
okay. Thank you. Ben, please.
Thank you. So, in conclusion then, we had the draft transportation improvement program and the air quality conformity determination. It would be our desire to be able to take it out for public comment on the 25th up through August 6th and then report back to this body on the 18th. Any comments that were received and any discussion items that may have come out. We do have the technical advisory committees that are meeting on the 27th prior to the conclusion of the public comment review and comment period. But then once this body has that opportunity on the 18th to review the information, then you would make your recommendations for the Regional Council's approval of the draft document on the 25th.
Okay, I appreciate that. Are there any questions for Ben? Seeing none, we're looking for a motion.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussions of the motion? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, now I want to stop now before we bring Scott up. The reason, well, there's several reasons. We want everybody to know each other, but I wanted to wait as long as I could into the meeting because I'd like to have us just go quickly around the room. But I'd like to start with Andrea Pearson. She is new to Wasatch Front Regional. She's a new employee, and she will be helping to manage the paperwork and everything else in that regard for Transcom. You received some emails from her, and so hopefully you recognize the name. So, Andrea, would you just take a moment to just give us a little bit of your background?
Certainly. Well, I am very glad to be involved with Wasatch Front Regional Council. Prior to this, I worked in the IT industry as an administrative assistant. Prior to that, I was in the higher education, and I started my administrative assistant career with Salt Lake Valley Health Department. Uh-huh. So I do have some love for community and moving projects forward to help citizens of our county and of Utah. That's about it.
any questions at all? Okay, thank you, Andrew. Let's go around the room just like this and come back. And everybody just quickly introduce themselves.
Toby Molesky, Pleasant View City.
Norm Searle, Riverdale City.
Scott Neck with Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Hamlet Rich with Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Elizabeth from Wasatch Front Regional Council.
David Boyd, Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Andy Silky, Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Ken Olson, also WFRC.
Dallas Wall, I'm here representing Scott Jones from UI.
Ed Hacker with WFRC.
Sam Flynn with the Solid Camp Council for Westland WFRC.
Steve Caldwell out of the Commission.
Dave Gear, Safety and Security at ETA.
Karen Cronin, representing Buckford County.
Jeff Harris, representing the Utah Department of Transportation.
Fred Marshall, representing Tula County.
Bob McKinley, ETA.
Joanne Sagini, the Delta.
Robin Cullimore, Cottonwood Heights.
Wayne Bingham, Wasatch Front.
Bill Applegar, Riverview City.
Andrew River, WFRC.
Mitch Adams, Clinton City.
Okay, thank you very much. Scott, we'll now turn the time to you for an active transportation report.
Great, thank you all for your time. Just to start off, I'm back this week from a month off. We just brought identical twin girls home, and so I'm going to simultaneously try to not fall asleep and not stumble over all my words, so I may refer back to my notes here, but really happy to be here. And
are you going to show us a picture?
I don't have a picture.
All right.
I need to be more prepared.
Okay.
Again, you know, my twin, I'm just glad to be here and have a tie and a shirt that's not spit up.
It only gets
worse. It only gets worse from here. So I gave a similar presentation to the RGC in January. Happy to be here. There's a bit of a timing lag. Part of that's been the month off and just trying to schedule here with you guys. But wanted to give you an update of what the Active Transportation Committee has been doing and a little bit about its work on priority setting and performance measures. To give you just a small amount of background, the Wasatch Front Regional Council RTP, the Regional Transportation Plan, as well as the TIP that Ben just went through, considers all modes of transportation, including active transportation. And over the last few years, certainly from 2012 on, there's been a much higher focus on active transportation in both of those documents. In May of 2012, the Regional Growth Committee officially established the Active Transportation Committee. And it's really designed to be a forum to increase coordination with active transportation efforts between all of our partner agencies, Mountainland Association Government, WFRC, and really broad stakeholder involvement. So to give you an idea of that, the membership of the ATC includes WFRC and Mountainland Association Government, as well as cities and counties across the region, UDOT, UTA, Utah Department of Health, and we have Bike Utah, local advocacy cycling organization that comes and is represented there in the Active Transportation Committee. So this is a kind of broad chart, don't get too hung up here, but the reason why is this important to you, the Active Transportation Committee reports directly through the Regional Growth Committee, as well as the Transportation Coordination Committee. So while we probably haven't had a whole lot of decisions or mandates that have come through either of these two groups, in the future, if there's a steering committee decision, both of these groups, including yourself, will be the funnel through which any of those decisions are taken. Right now, Active Transportation Committee operates as a steering committee for any active transportation project, complete streets, safe routes to schools. There's been some discussion about taking the Transportation Alternatives Program funding recommendations through the ATC to give them an idea there. But right now, what we've been focusing on is education and performance measures and really figuring out what the priorities of the group are. So to begin with priorities, in 2014, the ATC started did a priority setting exercise. It was in Farmington Station, a good chance to get out of the office and talk about what they'd like to do, and that document was updated in the fall of 2015. And some themes that came out of the ATC priorities: continue work on important regional studies and projects. I think that's one of the major really positive benefits that have come from the ATC, is just a broader understanding of where multiple agencies are in looking at active transportation projects, to focus their efforts on implementation of important regional projects, to increase education efforts around active transportation, and then more recently, the tracking and reporting back on regional performance measures. So this is for performance measures, the beginning of what we started with. This is 20 or 22 different performance measures that are all related directly to active transportation. That list has been pared down to 6 performance measures that will be tracked annually and 2 performance measures that we're using in our regional transportation planning cycle. If you look, we've got user counts and trend data, the regional active transportation infrastructure inventory, total funds spent on active transportation safety, air quality, and active transportation plan and policy inventory. This stuff's moving so quickly that while we were adopting these or bringing these forward to the Active Transportation Committee, FHWA released a ruling on pedestrian safety for a performance measure. So we're attempting right now to assure that these are rolled backwards through all of the FHWA performance measures, that they match performance measures listed in the Unified Plan, and really that we're funding or we're focusing on projects in 8 active transportation from a performance standpoint, the same way we look at highway and transit. So the 18 performance measures, really, they try to answer the question of how do we define success. So for some folks, maybe it's total user count. Success in active transportation means that we have new users utilizing the system. For some, it might mean additional funds spent, some reduced safety, air quality benefits are certainly there. So it's really trying to figure out the answer of how do we define success. If you look over the last 5 or 10 years for what we've done, significant infrastructure constructed in Salt Lake City and throughout the region as a whole, but is that good, bad, indifferent? Without tracking this, we really don't know. And that's our focus, and I think this is the focus of WMRC, is using a performance-based planning approach, that when we make decisions in the future, it's based on how it's going to affect these particular performance measures. So there have been a few themes that have come out. Originally, funding. How do we fund these improvements? And I think that was really harped on. If you look back at 2014, how we make our funding decisions was really key on the top of everybody's mind. And since that time, you have House Bill 362, you have Proposition 1, which is an option for counties for an additional funding source for active transportation projects. And then the FAST Act was passed, which provides a consistent funding source for transportation. So just in the last year, it's really changed from how do we fund this to how do we put it on the ground that quick. You have a funding source come out, and now we're just talking about let's just build this stuff. And something that's come out that was a bit of a surprise to me was how focused people were on education. And I think that as you figure out how to fund it, you build more stuff, you begin to see user conflicts, and then it comes down to to bicycle education. If you're familiar with the protected intersection down on 3rd South and 2nd West in Salt Lake City, that was the first protected intersection in the nation to go in. So we were the guinea pig. We're seeing how that works out. And I think most people understand how to use that, but really, how do we make sure that the cars understand, and bikes understand, and pedestrians understand how to use these things effectively? And ultimately, what is our goal? The goal is to get more people out and riding and using this infrastructure. So for next steps, if, you know, what do we really want? We want people to be able to safely utilize the system. The reason for creating these performance measures is to understand how well the active transportation network is working and being utilized. One of those, what we're going to do with those performance measures is we're going to take them all and calculate that annually. And Ben has been instrumental in this. He's helped us put together for the TIP, and this is current TIP funding year. We have 28% of the total TIP, totaling $14.7 million, is related to projects that improve active transportation. So that's one of those numbers that we'll put into our performance measures and plan on providing an annual report that's been talked about being timed with the legislative session. So it would come out at the same time as UDOT's annual report. And I think that's a good way to highlight some of these safety improvements and financial factors, and it's going to be a good way to elevate active transportation with the ultimate end of seeing more people out there using a safe and comfortable active transportation network. So that was quick. I'd love to talk to you guys about, we're 63 more minutes to 4 o'clock, but if you have any questions, I'd love to answer them now, and I really look forward to bringing this back to you and the Regional Growth Committee once we have those fully identified and pared down, and we'll bring them back to report. Yes, sir.
So you talked about moving some of the TAP programs under this committee?
Not necessarily moving them, but utilizing the Active Transportation Committee. It's an engaged list of stakeholders that would love to see those projects. And so, not to burden the program, it already goes through the technical advisory committees for Transcom, but to show them a list of projects as they come down the line, because you have a good group of people who'd be able to make recommendations.
So tell me how you see that happen.
I would think it would come between the TAP recommendation and this body. So there, there's a number of ways that we could look at reviewing and rating and ranking those projects. And, maybe there are changes there, but that's a process to change. And WFRC has been working on their rating and ranking criteria. So I don't see that happening quickly as far as plugging a new body in, but it's been brought up at the ATC that they'd like to see those. They kind of saw it this year on the back end, and there were some elected officials who would have liked to see those prior to the decisions being made, and so I think we'll bring them forward.
And just for information, that for some reason that slipped through the cracks this year, but in prior years we've actually taken the recommendations from the Technical Advisory Committee to the Active Transportation Committee. And ask for their feedback prior to the
time. My point with all that is that there isn't a formalized process. It can be more confusing and things like this happen where it's not. I'd suggest that that's really something the council feels would be beneficial, that it be formalized, that process, that there literally be a step in there that before it comes here, it goes to the Transportation Committee or the Active Transportation Committee, or that somehow they're part of the TAP or something. I mean, if it's just left kind of loosey-goosey, right, I think it will become more difficult to manage.
And this is my first year on staff, and so I may have missed that in the past, not being staff to WFRC.
I think that's a very good suggestion. Very good. Let me see if this is an appropriate thing to do. I would suggest, if this is appropriate, the staff make the recommendation of what that should be, and then take it to our chairman, Mayor Dolan, and have him review it, and then see where he wants to go with that from that point. Is that okay? Or would you modify
that? I'm sure he would be happy to review it, and I think it's appropriate to ask him about that. I might also request that you, as chair of this committee, and also the chair of the Active Transportation Committee, be given an opportunity.
Yes, I'm open.
We'd appreciate consulting with you, and you can issue us another commandment.
No more. But I think if we do that, it won't just die right here. But now we've given you a process to report.
Sure.
And that's what I think we're saying we don't want to happen.
Right.
Is there any other feedback or any other comments or questions?
And that's, it's really quick and high level. I just want to put this out in front of you so that you're familiar with the term ATC and who I am. Being new to staff just since July 1st last year, really happy to come out and work with you all and make sure that everybody's aware of what all the programs are doing, and active transportation is moving really quickly, and I think that you all will have an important role in seeing those decisions happen.
Thank you. I would just jump in for just a moment on this. I've probably mentioned this in here before, but I rode a bike when I was young, and I rode a bike in college a lot because of finances. And I went to a little school in Provo. It was a little in those days when I went to. It's not like it is now. But money was very short, and I parked my car and rode a bike everywhere I went. And then as I started my vocation, I rode a bike to work at that point. And then I left that. My wife has been very enthusiastic about bike riding and marathon running and all of that. And I love to walk, but I was a great disappointment to her as a runner and as a biker in that regard. So now, all these years later, I started a few years ago when I was in Minneapolis at a transit conference, and they're one of the bike capitals of the country. I really used my spare time to get out and observe their bike paths and what they were doing and so forth in that regard. And although that I personally was not into biking, I felt a real obligation because there's definitely a movement, there's definitely a reaction, there's a lot of enthusiasm for it. That as mayor, that I had an obligation to get involved with it in that regard. And so I did. And I've been grateful for the grants we've received as a city and all the help we've received and everything in that regard. Well, so I've ridden my wife's bike a little, and you have to overcome that a little bit because to her it doesn't look like a girl's bike. To me it does, and I still have a male ego that gets in the way of those kinds of things. And so this last month in May, I was invited by Carrie Sue Hamilton, who's a special needs school in our area. And during that week of Ride Your Bike to Work, they invited me to ride with them to work. And so I thought, oh, my word, what am I going to do here? So I went, and I thought, you know, I'm going to have to lay down on the side of the road because there were some hills involved and just let them go by me. Well, I had enough energy and enough pride that I rode in that. And it started to open up that personal experience or touch for me that this might be something that you really do want to consider. And I've always been a walker, walked many, many miles and walked most days. And so I went home and got a few brownie points from my wife. And I said, what would you think if I bought a bike? Oh, my word. You would have thought you would have thought it was the greatest thing in the world because she encouraged it and everything. So I bought a bike yesterday. And so I bought the bike and I had to pick it up after work. I had her drop me off and pick it up after work. And as I came from the Bangor on 134, which is a major street for us, in Grove Home, the speed limit on that road is 40 miles an hour. And then it drops to 35. And all of our major roads are either 45, 40, or 35 in Riverton. And so I'm riding home, and I think to myself, what have I done? What have I done? There is no protection around me at all. I mean, I can see the street. One little mistake, I hit a pothole, I am going to be in trouble. I had a helmet on, but, you know, I'm going to be in trouble. So I got home, and I thought, oh, my word, I just spent $600. Was this a wise decision or what? And so I went this morning for my first bike ride in the morning. And there was still traffic and so forth. And I went 4 miles, which to some of you, 4 miles is just pulling out of your driveway. For me, it was a commitment, you know. But I found that as I was out there, what's happening to me is I'm understanding the issue better. because I'm there. I saw how much more comfortable I felt on 47th West, where we got a grant to put bike, painted bike lanes. And I understood for the first time to see the protected bike lane. How much more comfortable I was, even though it's just about that wide, made me feel so much more comfortable. And I do passionate things, and sometimes I hate myself for it. But I made the commitment. I was all excited. So I made the commitment on my Facebook that I will ride my bike or walk to work this next, during this next year, as many days as I can. I will not, I don't feel comfortable when the road's a little icy or that kind of thing, or it's narrow and become a snowpack, but I'll walk, because I've always walked. So that gave me a little bit of an out there. So what I would suggest to you is a couple things. I don't know if I can say this. I don't know. I hope not upset anybody. But alcoholism is a major problem in my extended family. I have not had a problem with my parents, but in my extended family.
Does that mean you hold your alcohol well?
Yeah, it does. Well, that's where we are.
No problem there.
But there was nothing like my grandfather when he was a recovering alcoholic. He became the preacher of why nobody should drink at all, ever, you know. And you know how you get enthusiastic. So I don't want to do that with active transportation, because look at all the gray hair, and I'm just entering this arena. But I would say this to you, fellow mayors, whether you actively get involved in it and buy a bike or not, you will find, my guess is, that there is a deep interest from your people and your community to be involved in active transportation. And there was a study done by the county, because we tend to just think of active transportation being bike lanes on the road. But there was a study done by the county, and I think, and you might remember it, somebody here better than I, but I think it was 80% were people who were concerned with the slower bike riding and in more protected areas. And some of that group is young mothers or older mothers, or in my wife's case, a grandmother who wants to ride with her grandchildren but doesn't want to be in danger. And so, you know, there's this whole spectrum of it, and it's not just bike lanes. Now, in a way, I hate to say this, but I will. You know, when you have your favorite fishing hole, you hate to tell anybody about it, because you go back and there's 50,000 people there. Well, I would say this to you other mayors, though. My observation is money is flowing in active transportation through grants more than I've seen since I've been a mayor. And so this is really the time to look at what you're doing, and maybe the first step for you, it may not be, but maybe the first step for you is to get a master active transportation plan that, through no brilliance of me, other than to say, yes, that's a good idea, Riverton has there. And to do that as a starting point and then be able to go forward. Now, I only know Salt Lake County. I don't know those of you who are from other counties. But in Salt Lake County, under the direction of Mayor McAdams, there really has been a very large effort to increase funding and help and encouragement for active transportation. And so that has been very beneficial to us, as long as, in addition to what Scott's doing with Wasatch Front Regional, the feds are doing with funding and so forth, and the county funding. We have construction from grants in 2016, 2017, and 2018. And I was at in our hospital, RIC Hospital has a health fair. I was there Saturday with an active transportation map and with handouts showing that construction. And I'll tell you, I was the prettiest girl at the dance. And it's not because I'm physically pretty, but my booth was surrounded by people for 3 hours wanting to know more and more information about that. And people that lived in Riverton, and people that lived in our neighboring cities, because they bike through Riverton. And so I would just say to you, there's a high interest, and leave it at that, at least in our area of the world, and do with that what you see fit for your city. So thank you, Scott, for your presentation, and we will now move to Kip for the safety report. There he is, Kip.
He's in the green room.
Thank you, Mayor, for this opportunity to address the Transcom crew. Before I begin, I wanted to recognize a couple of people. We have Dave Garris from UTA's Chief Safety Officer, Dallas Wall from WCEC Engineering representing UDOT Safety. They were good enough to agree to be here to participate in this discussion. My purpose today is threefold. I wanted to give Transcom some information about some new safety material that's out there available to the public to better understand highway safety concerns within your community, and also to show you some of the trends and the needs that exist, and to briefly touch on what Wasatch Front is doing to incorporate safety in our planning efforts. I should mention most of the material you're going to see today comes from the UDOT website, New Metrics. We'll talk about that in a moment. So I appreciate Dallas and the staff at UDOT for making that available to help us understand what the issues are out there and work towards solutions. By a quick show of hands, how many have lost a loved one to a highway fatality? Loved one, extended family, a friend? Okay. That's a pretty good number. This really is a very sensitive and personal subject. We're going to be looking at a lot of charts and statistics, and that can seem cold and unfeeling. I just want you to know that's really just a tool to help us understand and deal with the problem. So, as I mentioned, there are UDOT is sponsoring two websites. These are available to the public. The first one up there requires that you create an account with UDOT. Now, if you're a member of local government, there won't be any problem with having that access. The second website is a simplified version of the metric data, and that's open to the general public. So both of those you can find to be very valuable. This map is showing just fatal and serious injury crashes in the Davis County area. The darker red are fatal crashes. The other shows up orange on this one. That's good to make the distinction. Those are serious injury crashes. There's other crashes not shown, minor injuries, possible injuries, or those crashes that are just property damage. Showing those would really just fill up the map. You wouldn't even be able to see what name you were looking at. By clicking on one of those events, you get very detailed information of that specific crash event, the severity of the crash, when it occurred, the time of day, the route even down to the milepost marker, number of vehicles involved, the manner of the collision, and even the potential countermeasures. So there's a lot of information that's available to you to investigate if you had particular safety concerns within your community. On this New Metrics site, there's also a tool where UDOT has teamed with BYU to create a UDOT crash prediction model. And what they've done there is compare each segment of the highway system to similar segments, those segments that are similar as far as functional class, the speed, the number of lanes, the traffic volume, and look at the crash history on a given segment and compare that to all the others and statistically determine if that segment is a higher or a lower risk compared to what would be expected statistically. So in that way, they can rank highway segments and prioritize their improvements. So what we're doing at Wasatch Front, as we build the regional transportation plan and look at evaluating different projects, we will look at the UDOT priorities to help us in our selection of projects. So just so you can see that this information is available in all of the counties, again, this is just showing fatal and serious injury crashes. You can see the level of detail you get in Weaver and Davis County, as well as Salt Lake and Tooele. So that information is out there for you to use.
Quite a few in the Tooele County, wasn't there?
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but I've been on scene on a lot of those. And they're not prison.
Definitely. And in fact, I learned that the Tree of Life sculpture out there in the Salt Lake Desert.
It's called West Desert.
West Desert.
By Wendover.
Just a few miles from Wendover. I learned that was a UDOT safety project. Because at about that milepost marker is where they would get a number of vehicles running off the road.
Oh.
Because of their experiences in Wendover, I guess.
Oh, man, that's
so
a neat
it was
story.
Meant to attract
their story. It's a lot different than what
just
we know. No, it's done by a multimillionaire because he wanted to leave some.
Well, I don't know who financed it, but it was intended as a safety.
You thought maybe wants to claim it, I don't know.
Is this data just for state highways, or does it pick up
thank you.
Surface streets in the community?
It does include local roads.
It does?
Yes.
Okay.
The BYU model does not, but the data, the crash data, does include local roads.
So the crash data comes from the Department of Public Safety, and so it captures all local government and all operation when it shows up.
Okay, so there are definitely some positive messages related to safety. This is looking back about 15 years, and the most recent 15 years, traffic fatalities are down 26%. However, the recent trend is that's been going up. And another concerning thing is this is very far from the goal of zero fatalities, so there's still a lot that needs to be done. Looking at the rate of crashes per 100 million vehicle miles traveled, going back two generations, you can see that the blue line, that's crashes of all severities, so all the way down to fender benders, okay? The risk of a crash has been cut by more than half. And the red line showing fatalities, we see a threefold improvement in the fatality rate. Now, Dallas can correct me if I'm wrong, but I would venture that this decrease has a lot to do with a larger percentage of our travel occurring on freeways, which are much safer than arterial highways. The fatalities going down would also could also be attributed to the vehicles we drive are safer than they were three generations ago. Seat belts, airbags, anti-lock brakes, and so forth are pretty much standard equipment now. So those are good messages to recognize, but again, we see the increase here in recent years. Looking at it,
I'm sorry, would you just go back for a moment, please? So this is showing per 100 million vehicle miles traveled.
Yes.
We know that we have seen an unfortunate uptick in fatalities, which I think part of the reason for that is because the number of miles being driven has gone up because the economy has improved. But what this data is showing is that the increase is not just because of the number of miles being driven has gone up, because this is a corrected for. This is per 100 million BMT, right?
Right. So the rate is going down, but because we are driving more, we're getting paid higher.
Aggregate, what I'm talking about, you're saying in the aggregate over time it's gone down. I'm talking about in the past few years, as we've come out of the recession,
rate has gone up.
The number has gone up, in part because of the economy and more miles being driven, but the rate has gone up also.
Yes. Congestion?
Has congestion increased in the last year?
We believe it's distracted driving. And the majority of it, I can't remember, 85% of our crashes, we believe, are a result of some form of distracted driving, not wearing your seatbelt, etc.
So an uptick in some sort of
proliferation of cars. Yes.
And this is statewide data.
Yeah.
We look at the urbanized area. That's the next slide. This is looking at just the 5-year slice. This is more recent, and you notice at the end of the previous slide, the last few years it was going up. This is the urbanized area along the Wasatch Front. The fatalities in red on the bottom is holding steady, if anything, increasing slightly. There's definitely an increase in the number of serious injuries in the urbanized counties of the Wasatch Front. So there's more that needs to be done. Bringing this still closer to home, this slide is looking at county-specific the fatalities just last year in each of your respective counties. At the risk of getting too emotional or personal, I wanted to share with you these booklets that UDOT has prepared. These are some, they call them their team memorials. In here are accounts written by the family members who have lost teenagers in a highway fatality. And some of these were very, very difficult to read. There's about 5 copies here. I'll pass those around. I think this audience especially has the opportunity to carry this message and share it to a large number of people. I think the saddest part about some of the stories recounted in there is so many of those deaths were preventable just by changing our behaviors. Scott just finished talking about active transportation. We're certainly seeing a growing presence of pedestrians and bicycles in the transportation system. Pedestrians are involved in just 1% of all the crashes, yet they represent 15% of the fatalities, and for obvious reasons, they're the most vulnerable ones out there. Bicycles are almost as vulnerable. They have some maneuverability, but certainly we need to do more to educate bicycle users on helmet use and other safety practices, and educate vehicle operators about the presence of bicycles in the transportation system. Looking at the relative risk by these different modes of transportation, if you're in a vehicle involved in a crash, 99 times out of 100, you're going to walk away. It's that 1% that are involved in a crash that will suffer a serious injury or a fatality. However, on a motorcycle, your chances are 1 in 10 that you have a serious injury or fatality. That's probably one of the most dangerous ways to travel. And for obvious reasons, you have all the speed capabilities of a vehicle without the safety advantages. Transit-related fatalities, and I have to confess, this chart may be incomplete. This was taken from the Strategic Highway Safety Plan. So UDOT is only recording fatalities that are on a highway involving a vehicle. UTA is recording some fatalities as well, and I didn't know how to bring together those two data sets. Something that might occur out on the rails between highways isn't included here. So there may be a handful more related to transit. But as the transit system has expanded, the opportunity for conflicts between pedestrians and vehicles and buses and trains with very unique operating characteristics, there's definitely more exposure out there. So one of the messages I'd like you to take home is the importance of wearing a seatbelt. The last couple of days, I heard on the radio some rather frantic news reports from highway patrolmen about the flurry of fatalities, I think 21 highway fatalities in a two-week span. And one of those fatalities involved a man who had been cited just the week prior for not wearing a seatbelt. If you're not wearing a seatbelt, you're four times more likely to have a serious injury and eight times more likely to be involved in a fatality, to be killed. Utah has a mandatory seatbelt law now, and I was not a fan of this law. I always wear my seatbelt. Looking at this kind of information, you'd have to be stupid enough to wear a seatbelt. But if it takes Utah passing a law against being stupid, then I think that's great. So I wanted to finish here with kind of a quiz about the top five behaviors we could adopt and teach to our families and others that we come in contact with to move us closer towards zero fatalities. If you're listening, the last 30 seconds, anybody care to venture the first one on the list?
Seatbelts,
exactly. Now, these add up to 97%, but I think some of these overlap. They might be seatbelts and other things that were in effect. Number two on the list, anybody have an idea? We haven't talked about it, actually. Not yet.
Don't drink and drive.
That's the one. Drunk driving. Or any kind of impairment. Someone mentioned the third one. It said speed. Another word for speed is aggressive driving. I thought this referred to road rage, but most of the time it's speeding is considered aggressive driving. Certainly other kind of practices, tailgating, saluting, whatever it is people do, is not a safe way at all. Number four? Anybody?
Can I comment on number three?
Please.
One of the questions that we've been asked is, because we have been raising the speed limit both in the urban area and the rural areas, if that has a contributing factor to the increasing number of deaths on the roadway and in the rate, and we're not seeing that those increases are happening or those deaths are happening in those areas where we have done speed limits. Going back to seatbelt and distracted driving as the primary causes of the
and impaired driving?
Yes.
Just to add to that, sometimes it's not so much the speed, but the speed differential.
Man,
if there's a fast vehicle going, even 10 to 20 miles an hour faster than the rest of the traffic, then that speed differential creates a lot of potential for danger.
Okay. We had talked about number four previously, anybody?
Distracted?
Yes, the distracted driving.
What did you say? I was on my
oh, I'm glad you weren't driving. And this is one I definitely need to follow more religiously. I just need to make this one tap and I can make this phone call. Sometimes that's all it takes. Cell phones are considered one of the prime culprits. It could be any kind of distraction, adjusting the radio, fixing your hair, I don't know what people do, looking out the window. The asterisk is on there because it's really hard for the reporting officer to document that someone was using their cell phone. If they say, no, I wasn't, unless they get a court order, they can't inspect the phone. So that could be even larger than what's suggested there. The last thing we can do, not the last thing, but the next best thing. Yes, I heard someone say drowsy. If you're tired, pull over, rest, have someone else drive. We have some time for questions. I'll repeat those two websites if you didn't get a chance to shot those down before and would like to.
I would like to see some statistics for motorcycle riding without helmets.
They call them donor cycles.
Donor cycles?
Donor. Can I have one?
Is there a law, a helmet law? I don't know.
No.
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 Can I just one real quickly?
Can we get some, I don't know if we have them, but can we get some statistics on that for Mayor Sakini?
Sure.
I'm not sure who to look at for that question, but okay. We'll follow up with you, Mayor Sakini.
You mentioned the predictive analytics tool that's being developed as well, and to me that offers a lot of potential in the future. Basically, we're going in and doing statistical analysis and seeing where we have frequency of accidents, severity of accidents, looking at the attributes of those intersections and saying, okay, what is correlating with both the rate and the severity of the accidents. And that will eventually, what we're hoping is give us the ability to go out and start predicting and start putting improvements in to lower those rates so that we can see where we get the biggest bite from the apple with the type of improvement. Really is quite interesting stuff. And I don't know that much about it, but it is pretty fascinating.
Yeah. My name is Dallas Swan, and I'm here representing UL Traffic and Safety. And that's my primary, I'm actually a consultant that works for Scott Jones, and that's my primary work that I do with him.
Predictive modeling, I think I've answered it. Dave, is there anything else you'd like to share about traffic safety? So, personally, I want to introduce Sheriff Ortiz, or he came in after the introduction, as far as the plan of the paramedic, but also he is the state coordinator for Operation Lifesaver. I have the honor of being the board chair for Operation Lifesaver, which is a national railroad safety outreach organization that goes out to promote railroad safety for freight and, of course, transit has been part of that in Utah. So we appreciate Vernon's opportunity here. The one thing that we have to talk about, too, on these is that for this, the fatalities indicator that we have on the transit side is a lagging indicator, not an indicator of safety. We do a lot of things on the front side, leading indicators. What do we do to educate the public and warn about there? A little bit along Jeff's line of predicting where things happen. They happen everywhere along the 170 rail crossings that we have. But if you look back at last year and the years before, every single one of those was somebody running through a stop sign, running through a down gate. The gate is across, the lights are on, they go through that gate, break the gate, hit by the vehicle. So we put up flashing transit signs. You'll see those downtown. We put up additional overhead signs. So it really is the paying attention effort that we have. And the other thing that you have on the highway side is you have a very high number of serious incidents and a lower number or lower rate of fatalities. Exactly flip on the transit side. If you get into an accident with a transit vehicle, you're much more likely to be killed than they're very, very, very minor ones. If you get bumped, if you're in an accident with a train, you're very likely to be killed. So we do a lot of things up front in. Just back to Operation Lifesaver, one of the good laws in Utah is that for driver safety, if you take driver safety at a public facility, at a high school, you have to have an hour of railroad safety. So Operation Lifesaver is out giving about 20,000 presentations a year for all the high schoolers who really need the lesson and giving them an introduction. We'll be down at the Lehigh Rodeo next weekend because there's actually a gate that crosses the front runner line. Front runner in Union Pacific, and in the agreement we bought with DNRGW line, we have to go down there every year and open up that gate where there's not a train coming, of course, let people cross into the Lehigh Rodeo grounds there, so UP and UTA coordinate with Lehigh and Utah County. So a lot of things that we're doing up front, unfortunately we still have these, but again, on our side last year, every single one of those was distracted or running a down gate that caused that.
I think it's actually quite interesting to note that when we talk about UTA safety, the point you're making is that the issues that have occurred, the incidents that have occurred, have been pedestrians or drivers or bikers maybe in interacting with the system, you know, crossing gates, not paying attention. When people are
using transit, whether they're on front runner or tracks or the bus, it is exceptionally safe. I mean, relatively speaking, it's much safer to actually use transit than it is to drive. And I just think it's a credit, actually, to Dave, to you, and to all the emphasis that UTA puts on safety, that the users of the system are incredibly safe. And that's true year in, year out.
We try to train them even better.
Yeah. Anything else? Any
no,
questions, other questions or comments?
Hey, just to say that in the greater sense of the term, and if you've seen some of UW's promotions, you'll understand what that is to the members of Transcom. Buckle up. Thank you.
Thank you. Muriel, any final words on this?
Sure. I'll just briefly...
We are under 2 weeks away from this.
Yes, this is why I apologize, but I am, like, typing away and multitasking the meeting.
Distracted
meeting. So you all have in front of you the Wasatch 2024 by 2050 Consortium and Active Transportation and Health Summit information. So as some of you know already, the National Association of Regional Councils, our national member association, selected our region to host their 50th annual conference. So they will be here in our region from Sunday, June 26th through Wednesday, June 29th. So less than 2 weeks away. And in conjunction with the national conference, we are supercharging the events with the summit and the consortium. It's two main objectives for the day: refreshing the regional vision, looking out through 2050 to reflect the dynamic changes in the region. And then also, the theme throughout the day is hitting on how we can design our communities in a way that promotes healthy lifestyles and active living. So I won't go through every session here. You all have this in front of you, but it's jam-packed with engaging speakers and relevant content for the whole day. Again, Wednesday, June 29th. We kept registration costs very low, $25 for each attendee. That gets you breakfast and lunch at the Little America Hotel. All of these sessions, networking opportunities with peers across the region. A lot of elected officials, you all have signed up already, but if you haven't, please do so. In the afternoon, there's more breakout sessions and then some mobile tour options where you can actually go and see on the ground the things that are happening in the region. The project, the Transportation and Land Use Connection project that Andrew mentioned earlier with South Salt Lake City, one of the mobile tours is focused on the development that's happening along the Sugar House Streetcar and the work that they did through that project, the TLC project. So anyway, we encourage you all to come, and then also to push the information out via your communications channels. So if you do not have the registration information, we sent out a mass email again just earlier this week, but please just get in touch with me. I will get you all that information and would welcome you guys sending it out on your email listservs to your residents or putting it on your social media platform. So.
Any questions at all? Any other business?
I'm just interested, I know what the title, autonomous driving.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how far along are we that that's really a safe idea?
Mayor, what we're trying to do at this point is it's being driven by the, by the private sector. That's where the technology
is. It's being driven by no one. That's why we call the concept of that.
The development of autonomous vehicles by the private sector, and I believe, is coming fast and furious. Technology, I believe, will be there very relatively quickly. The policy implications of that, on the other hand, I don't know that we'll deal with them as well as we will with pure technology. So what we're doing at the DOT is, one, on an operational level, how do we enable those vehicles through wayside communication, whatever, to actually operate? From a planning perspective, we're trying to figure out long-term implications for planning. And traditionally, we've done past trends, single-point forecasts of travel demand. Those days are over. What we need to be able to do is scenario plan around the adoption of autonomous vehicles. What happens to capacity? What happens to travel? So that discussion is about what are we doing today to be ready for it when it comes here, and how are we planning for it in the future? It's coming fast.
Has somebody say that won't be long before triple semis will be not driven by people, but that scares me to death.
You know, Mayor, the thing about all of this that's interesting is that autonomous and connected vehicles actually has the potential to dramatically improve safety.
Absolutely.
Because you saw Kip's presentation.
Absolutely.
The great majority of accidents that occur are because of human error. And so
But are the machines smarter?
They're better at this.
Okay.
You know, there's a bunch of really good... I might suggest, Mr. Chairman, that at a future meeting of this group that we would have some information presented on this topic.
There's
really great info and actually some videos that are... I mean, sometimes you don't really get something until you see it in a movie. And there's some really great videos that display the technology that I think would be really... Actually, UDOT showed some of the stuff at a presentation to the Legislature Transportation Committee just yesterday, and it's really interesting. So,
if you're... Carlo mentioned this presentation was 94% of these crashes are due to human error. So, So, if we're able to, over time, integrate the technology in a safe way, then hopefully we can get to that goal of zero fatality. But I hear you. I'm not ready to put my kids on an autonomous vehicle and send them off to school yet. So, yeah.
Any other business? Seeing none, we look for a motion.
Motion to move.
Is there a second?
Yeah.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. It's August 18th, I believe. I'm running from memory. It's our next meeting. Is that right? Thank you.
Okay.